Once upon a time, there were millions of businesses struggling. Every day, they wasted time, effort, and money on repetitive tasks that added no value. One day, the Better Automation podcast by Processio came to help them find a way. Because of this, these businesses grow, save time, reduce costs, innovate, and make better decisions. Because of that, these businesses scale and use human creativity the way it is intended to be used to change this world. Hello, my name is Aziz, and I'm your host at Better Automation Podcast by Processio, where I interview the world's top experts and share their very best ideas on how to improve automation in your business, processes, and life. My guest today is Andy Wingrave. Andy is a certified Zapier Premier expert, a Make Expert Plus, an Airtable consultant, and a lover of APIs. He runs Connect My SaaS, which makes it easy to discover how to integrate software apps you're already using and seek out new ones so you can automate your backend and boost your business. Andy, how are you today?
Wonderful. Thanks for having me. It's really nice to be here and chatting with you. I'm flattered by your introduction. The fact that anybody thinks of me as an expert at anything is hilarious to me. But that's very kind of you to say.
Thank you. And well, we will speak about so many topics that I'm sure everybody will be surprised, even yourself, by the depth of the answers and how fascinating they will be, because they will be true to you, and that's what matters. And therefore, I will ask this. Why automation? Like, what's the story that made you begin working in this field? Why does it matter to you? Why is it important to help people in this way?
So it's a good question. Aziz, I just want to say, I really like your style. I really like your the way you present and the way you guide the podcast. I feel like I'm in safe hands with you here. Just want to say that up front. So how did I get into automation? I don't have very many fascinating stories, but I'm quite fascinated by this one because it felt like I was in jail for quite a long time. Not actual jail. I've not committed any crimes that I've been been prosecuted for, but I was in employee jail for a long time. To give you kind of a little bit of an understanding, sorry, I'm just going to stop talking and you maybe edit this out. But yeah. So to give you a bit of a background, let's take it back to when I was about 17. What do you want to do with your life when you're 17? Who knows? Who the hell knows what's out there when you're 17? Barely understand this crazy world we live in at 17. Barely understand it at 37, let alone 17. But I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. And I really struggled with school. I really, really, really struggled with school. I felt like standardized tests were stupid. I felt like a lot of the way we were forced to learn at school just didn't work well with me. My brain works in a very specific way, in a way that I'm comfortable with, but it doesn't go well with how traditional classrooms work. So I really struggled towards the end of school and I just kind of wanted to drop out and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So fast forward a few years and I still hadn't figured it out. I'd gone to uni a couple of times and dropped out, and then I met a girl and she was going to Edinburgh to study marketing. And I was like, oh, well, I'll go do that degree and I'll join a year after her, because I don't know what else I'm going to do. But the good thing is she'll go and I'll get her books for free the next year, so I don't need to buy any books. That was the reason I chose marketing. But because I couldn't even tell you what marketing was before I chose it. But there I was, having to make a decision. And I didn't really like being in science labs and stuff like that. And I don't really like, basically, I fell out with the computer what's the word, department at my high school. So I didn't do any coding. Like, I loved it. I remember loving coding when I was in like 10, 11, 12. But I fell out with them and I never got to do more. So I was in this limbo land. So I did marketing for 4 years, did well at it, but I hated it. But it did teach me a lot of skills that I'm very grateful I have now, actually. But at the time, it didn't seem like it was a good thing. Anyway, fast forward, I got a new job. And that gets us to the start of your question, right? Like, how did I get into automation? Well, here's the thing. I started a job. I took any job that I could. I was really lucky to land a job just in the middle of the recession, actually. A company called Eurogamer in Brighton. And for the first 6 years of my career, I'm working at Eurogamer, Comscore, and LinkedIn. I worked in this field called ad operations. Now, if you don't know, ad operations is the most dull job in tech. It is literally copying and pasting scripts and putting them into an ad server. It is mindless work, and it is very stressful as well, because any mistake that you make has the potential to cause a company to lose thousands, if not millions of dollars in some cases, which had happened, and not to me, but to other people. I did make mistakes, of course, but not quite to the millions of dollars, maybe to the $1,000 or $2,000 level. But it was really tough, and I was like, and I got to that stage around about 29 or 30 where I was like, this can't be my life. Like, oh my, what have I done? And I think everybody gets to that at some point, right? Like, it might happen when you're young, it might happen when you're 40, it might happen when you're 60, but at some point you're going to realize that you spent a lot of time doing something that was very foolish. And to me, that was working in corporate America, quite honestly. Not to slag off corporate America, I learned so much valuable stuff from that. But I really struggled with two things. Number one, quite honestly, authority. I hated the fact that like managers would tell me what to do and they wouldn't. And I just really struggled with like the idea that this organization even assumed that they knew what they were doing, because quite honestly, and what's quite apparent with many of the companies that I either worked at or kind of view from afar, is that quite often a lot of people don't know what they're doing and they just wing it and then expect you to follow their lead, which I find incredibly insufferable. So for me, I always struggled, and I'm very combative as a person. Like, if I believe something, I'll speak up. That served me well in lots of ways, and it's obviously every personality trait has good things and bad things. I'm sure you can infer lots of bad things from that, but actually I'm quite happy with that personality trait because it allows me to demand excellence of myself, which I think has made me successful, or somewhat success, allowed me to make a career, I don't want to say successful, allowed me to make a career of automation. But I suddenly found myself at this age, I guess, hating my job. I talked to my manager, and this manager I really did like. Shout out to Mr. Matt Cain. He was just one of the best managers I've ever had. Just because he didn't demand anything of me, because he saw how much I demanded of myself, I think. I mean, I'm putting words in his mouth, but I think he saw how much I demanded of myself. So all of my engagements with him were like really amazing, and I think I went into quit one day, or like I was unhappy one day. I don't know what the situation was, and I think he sat down and he was like, "Well, you don't need to quit. There's lots of opportunities." And anyway, I decided instead of quitting and trying to get a new career or getting another job doing the same thing at some other place, which is always a bad idea, by the way. I did it many times. I would just move to Singapore with LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn were like an amazing company to work for, of course, but like I didn't get on with Singapore. Singapore didn't get on with me, and not like just the work culture and just the heat and the like. I was a bit lonely and stuff like that. So I just found myself at the end of Singapore being like, I don't know what I'm doing in my life. So I started being like, I started this process of figuring out, what do I want to keep in my life, and what do I want to add to my life, and what do I want to remove from my life, right? Like, stop, start, continue, I guess you might want to call it. And I fundamentally realized I was in the wrong career, right? Like I wasn't, the reason why I was in the wrong career was because my mind was so bored with what I was doing. I would always look for ways to improve it, automate it, make it faster, make it better, build products for people to automate stuff. And I was very good at that, but nobody would give me a job in product. And in fact, that frustrated the hell out of me because all I wanted my whole career was a job in product. Because I wanted to manage a process or a project or a product, but not have to manage the people. I don't really enjoy the concept of management, like especially departmental management, where quite honestly, like the best managers I had, Matt Cain and another couple, but the best managers I've ever had were basically therapists. Like, I mean, they didn't demand anything of me. They didn't do anything. They would come in, we'd sit across from each other and I would rant at them and they would be happy for me to rant at them. And that's when things were great. The worst managers I ever had were people who were like, who the hell is this guy? Who the hell is this Scottish guy? Like grumpy about everything. I really struggled to like find my place in corporate America because of that, because of my expectations of management and because of my like disdain for authority, really. Because I don't believe anybody should have authority over anyone, which is why I really struggled to bring anybody onto Sastronomical to help me with the consultancy or with anything else. And I kind of need to. I've got away with a lot via automation. But anyway, back to that. I didn't want to be a manager. I wanted to learn how to code. And I wanted to find something more fulfilling. And at that point, I pivoted. I pivoted towards from AdOps, like which is a semi-technical thing, into solutions architecture, solutions consulting. And the way that came about was I was looking for jobs desperately, trying to get out of Singapore. And I applied for a job. And basically, the test, and so I didn't know how to code at that point. I'd never coded anything in my life. Maybe tried an HTML course or whatever and thought, oh, this is too much. And I had to do a test, and it had to be done in 24 hours. And I had to teach myself CSS in 24 hours. I did a terrible job of it. However, I handed them the thing, and it wasn't even 24 hours. It was like, they sent me the thing, and went, you're going to have to code this in CSS in like 4 hours. And I tried it, and I basically completely messed up, and I sent them in. I was like, here's my submission, I'm really sorry. So what I did then was I was like, I want this job, right? Because this job is a pathway for me to start learning about JavaScript, learning about code, change my career, all this stuff. And I decided that, like, I don't care, even though the deadline passed, I'm going to work all weekend. So I spent all weekend learning how to code, or learning CSS and HTML, and submitted it. And that got me, and then they were like, interesting. Okay, well, that's quite unorthodox, but we like your commitment to getting stuff right. So we'll give you a chance at the interview. I got the job. It took them a long time to get back to me, but I got the job. And that started me on a path towards like solutions architecture. Worked at a bunch of other companies, really amazing companies. Again, that I'm really proud to have worked at, particularly Mixpanel, where I had another amazing boss. But Mixpanel was amazing. And all of these places just taught me so much. And in the background, I was learning how to code. So overall, like, to answer your question, the longest way possible, I got into automation because nobody would give me a job in automation. And all I wanted to do was that. And the more I worked at companies, like the more I'd work on big, huge, really impactful project, I would lead them as well. I'd be like, but if you look at my history, if you look at my LinkedIn, you'll see, the highest level I ever got to in working for corporations was like senior product manager, and that was, even then, that was a misnomer. It wasn't really a product management role, and that's what gave me the push. So when I started to think about automation, I started to learn JavaScript and stuff, and then I saw in 2016, I saw Jesse post on Reddit, hey, is there anybody wanted to become a Zapier expert? We've got a program in place. And I thought, wow, that'd be amazing. Because I'd been using Zapier at that point internally for loads of stuff, and I started to get really comfortable with it and saw the power of automation. And it was just awesome. I was just like, I'm sold, I want to do this. So from 2016, I had that in my back of my mind where I was like, that's what I want to do. Like, I want to do that. And then they launched the portal and I was like, wow, that looks cool. And I saw like Luhu and Connex and all these people that I've come to call my peers and my friends. I saw all of them like just like, and I just thought that's what I want to do. I want to start my thing and like do everything my own way, which I do. Everything is done my own way. I don't work with somebody who doesn't want to work my way, because like I know how I work, I know how my brain works. I have the freedom to be like to work in the way that I want. But yeah, like in 2016 it was just a culmination of feeling like I'd really got into the wrong career, and also being in tune with what I love, right? Like there's so much I love about what the everything that I've created for as part of Sastronomical, which is I work my own hours. I work exactly the way I want. Everything's automated. I don't have any, I barely take on any big projects. I don't like them. I don't like writing. Basically, once I started doing it, I decided, right, I'm going to double down on automating away all the stuff I hate. I hate writing proposals, so I'm either not going to write them or I'm going to automate it, like in a way that is best as I can. I hate chasing people for invoices, so I'm going to make everybody prepay for my time. And you know what? Like, all of these things, I was like, wow, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But it was just experimentation. And the more I experimented, it's like, well, this seems to be working, and people seem to be happy with me. And I just decided, like, that I was going to change what it meant to be a consultant for myself. So I cut out any most proposal writing. I still have to write some. So I cut out most proposal writing. And I cut out all the stuff I hate. So over the past 3 years, I've crafted a really amazing like niche in just doing stuff that I love. And it gives me so much satisfaction because I get to entertain people while I'm building stuff that's going to save them time. So for me, like the way that I've created my company and consultancy for automation is basically automate all the way away all the stuff you hate, which is what automation is amazing for, and then double down on all the stuff you love. So every day for me is a joy, right? Like I get up and I'm just really happy with what I do. Aside from working with some interface changes, I'm not going to name any names, but sometimes software, obviously, it can be buggy and cause lots of panic and stress, and those things are never fun. But otherwise, I'm really like, I mean, that if that's all I've got to complain about, some UX problems, I mean, I've got it pretty good, I think. So I'm very fortunate and very grateful for like the things that have come into my way and the path that has led me to being an automation consultant, because it's exactly what I was made to do. I think, I mean, it feels like it is so, and I get a really, really huge buzz out of helping people. The feeling of starting a call and having somebody in front of you that's come to you with a problem to solve and being like, sure, let's get to it, and seeing and teasing out of them the requirements and the end goal, like pivoting all the way to and meandering the way there and solving the problem in an hour and having them be happy about it, is the most joy I've ever felt, and the most satisfied I've ever felt with anything I've ever done in life. And I love working with Zapier. I love working with Make. I love working with Airtable. All of these software pieces of software are amazing. And I really enjoy consulting on them. So yeah, for me, it's been a journey, huge, long journey. I mean, the journey was 10 years and I managed to condense that into about 16 minutes, but, here I find myself and I would not be anywhere else.
Thank you. That's fascinating. As I said previously, so you're someone who you understand how your brain works and you understand that That's your power, because otherwise, if you're not following how your brain works, you're being inefficient. You're someone who demands excellence of yourself. You're someone who has a disdain or a resistance to authority as well. And you're living your best life. It sounds wonderful to a lot of makers or people in the no-code community who might decide and think, I want to do the same thing as Andy. But as you said, there are things about you that made this the best career for you. So imagine someone new is watching right now and they're thinking, okay, do I have what it takes? What would you describe and say, okay, if you have these characteristics, that will make you a great solution architect or automation expert or whatever it is. And if you were to if someone shouldn't meander all over the place to get those skills, what would you recommend as a plan for someone to get really good at this? What should they learn first? How and in what way?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I'm going to answer it in a roundabout way because that's my style. I'm just going to write this down. So it's a great question. And I actually, I had somebody who I won't name message me and ask me if I needed help. And I do need help. If somebody's out there that thinks they can do this, please message me. I'm open to hiring or creating some kind of relationship with you. But somebody messaged me the other day and said, hey, I'm looking for automation work. And I said, let's have an interview. Now, for me, if I'm going to hire somebody, this business has become my life. It's very important to me and I'm very protective over it. If I'm going to hire somebody, it needs to be one of two people. Somebody who's going to come in and basically run the whole thing like an agency, maybe like a traditional agency, but basically make me become hands-off, right? So they're going to have to come in and run it. I don't really want to run an agency. Not my forte. I like helping people, but all the stuff that goes into it and doing it in the kind of agency style, not my thing. I'm happy for somebody else to do it, but I won't be a part of that. So that's one that might be who I'd hire. Somebody who can be yes, I've ran an agency before, or I think I can do it because of X, Y, and Z. Sure. I'd be very open to those conversations. Or the other hand is just somebody who can use Zapier or Table and make. But we had this conversation, and what I found out about this person, very intelligent, really nice, great. They were making a really big career shift, but what was very apparent about them was that they hadn't defined what they wanted to do. They were oh, no code seems cool, and they were kind of sort of interested in it. But when I think about my job, I get up, I'm super enthusiastic about it. I really love helping people. I love the tools I work with. Like I said, Zapier, Table, and Make. Just it's a joy to use them every day. If I'm going to hire somebody, I need somebody with that level of passion about, doesn't need to be about those things, but it needs to be about something. So it sounds trite and over said, but having passion is the first step, but it's only the first step. Now the second part of this comes down to I'll take it back to when I was deciding what I wanted. What I found was I codified my goals. I basically said, what do I want my life to look like by the time I'm 35? Now by the time I got to 35, it kind of looked like that. But then I was what do I want it to look like now, by the time I'm 40? And it was very different, right? Obviously, I'd changed, I'd grown, I'd started a business. So my life become, my goals become very different. But regardless of whether the goals change or the destination change or the goalposts move or the whatever saying you want to say, regardless of what happens, the consistent thing is having goals and working towards them. So that's number two, right? So passion, goal setting, and then three, mapping your goal setting with your actions, right? So if you want to be in automation, right? Let's say you want to be in automation or no code, right? So here's a really good thing. when I started in Zapier, I loved automation, but obviously I was exposed to no code in general, which includes Webflow and Bubble and all this front end stuff. I hate front end. My mind doesn't work like a front end designer. I'm not very good at front end. You give me a logic puzzle. You give me like a workflow to create in a really efficient way. That's how my mind works. And yeah, like to echo your point earlier, being in tune with how your mind works and what you want out of your life and applying that to your goal setting will make all the difference, because it will allow you to focus. Because yeah, sure, everybody can be a no-code consultant and be half-assed at everything, but it's not in your interest to be half-assed at everything. It's in your interest to be amazing at one thing, because then you're amazing at one thing and you'll always be able to do that thing better than anybody else, or at least to a par of other people who are good at it. Again, that's my own self-confidence, like refusing to call myself an expert. But yeah, like having an understanding of your skill set, of what you want out of life. A good example of this, and I know it's answering the question around a bit way again, but like I met a girl about 4 years ago, and she was great, and we dated for about 3 years, and it was a great time. But she was a doctor, and she really struggled to, and I won't name her, but like she was a doctor, and she was really struggling to deal with like the choices she'd made in life. She was like, she'd chosen a career path, but into surgery, like, and it wasn't her forte. And she was like, I'm 30, what am I gonna do the rest of my life? I need to like do this for another 30 years. I don't think I can. And it's like, it's never too late. I didn't start learning to code till I was 30, right? It's never too late to learn a new skill. So we just took all of the different things she could be doing, like, and went, right, here's all the things. Does this interest you? Nah. Yes. Why not? Yes. Oh, why does that interest you? Why doesn't that interest you? We did that for all the specialities of medicine, which I think there are about 70, probably, maybe 30, I can't remember, between 30 and 70, but there are tons of them. So anyway, we whittled it down to like, what is she good at? What does she want out of life? She doesn't want to tell people, she doesn't want to tell families that their child has died. She doesn't want to have to do tons of admin. She doesn't want to have to like work really late nights and do stressful, strenuous work. So, okay, cut out all of that. So we landed on more kind of subjects that were like a lot, like really far away from that, and then accentuated the things she did want out of her life so that she could create that life for herself. So overall, what we did was we worked that out and ended up like whittling it down to three things that she could do. And she then went on to study radiology, which I believe she's doing now. But take that example of like just somebody that I met in that career crisis or in that exploratory phase. Doesn't need to be a crisis. It comes down to like just defining what it is that you're good at, or like, or and trying things and seeing if you like them, and if you are getting better at it and you're enjoying getting better at it. All of these things are important. So like take no code. You could be like, oh, well, like the landscape's huge. But really it is. But at the same time, there are going to be things that are going to like stand out to you, right? Like front end, for example, like you might explore like Bubble or Adalo or Webflow and find that actually, like, even though Webflow seems to be dominant, like you actually really like Adalo or whatever, right? Like I really like Adalo, but for me, like, and just focus in on that, right? Like it could be Zapier, right? That you could be like, okay, I really love automating. So if you like Zapier, I would always recommend learning to code for any of this stuff, even though it's no code, it's so funny. I learned to code at 30, like I said, and I would say it was the best thing I ever did. Even though I live in this no-code land, still I write JavaScript at least 3 times a day for 3 different clients minimum, because it's such a powerful tool. Being able to code, it gives you it opens up so much freedom, right? Like, because it's not only it's not only a desired skill set, it's just something that is so critical in, like, and it's been critical for the past 20 years, 30 years. But if you haven't learned to code, you always can. And it would always give you a grounding in whatever you're trying to do, right? Like if you're going to become a WordPress consultant, like it helps to know PHP, right? If you're going to become a Webflow consultant, it helps to know HTML, it helps to know CSS. It doesn't need to be JavaScript, it can be, and it certainly should be for Webflow. And the same for Zapier and Make, right? Like having this concept of like how computers talk to each other, like how data structures work, right? Like I hadn't heard of like a linked list until I was 33, right? Like I didn't know what this stuff meant. It was all so abstract to me. But learn to code will set you apart from 99% of people. It's hard, but it's very worthwhile. So that's my recommendation. Know your brain, set some goals, work towards those goals, learn to code.
And be passionate. I love this. This is a wonderful recipe. Yeah, also know how your brain works. That works as well. And okay, for you, because you are mentioning how you have your own way or your own approach to automate. Let's say someone wants to understand and follow that method. How do you do it? Especially, for example, you mentioned like you create an optimized workflow on your own, where there are some other people who say actually creating a theoretical workflow doesn't really work in reality. Take what is already there and then begin to tweak and improve it as it is, rather than creating something from scratch or whatever. But to you, how do you visualize or bring a solution or create a whole automation thing? I don't mean in the details, but like your approach, your perspective, how do you think about it?
Yeah, so it took me 4 years to codify this, and I only codified it yesterday, but I codified it very effectively because I was really struggling to help a customer. They came to me and they were like, oh, I've got all this stuff. There's like, there's just too many departments and people and companies and software, and I don't know any of this. And they were really stressed out. And I was like, it's okay. Let's like take a pause. And what we need to do in order to create an automation, what we need to do is, first of all, like is a combination of two things, or one of two things, is either determine what admin tasks or tasks that you're currently doing that you could automate, right? Determine what you hate doing, right? And explore whether it can be automated, right? Particularly things like invoicing and things like that are really boring to most people, as they should be, because they are boring tasks. Now, you can maybe think about that, right? So like, okay, so I teased out of him that he actually wanted like, he was in HR. So he wanted like, basically when somebody got given an email in their company, that they got added to the HR platform and that their onboarding started. So the way that I teased that out of him was to get him to ignore all of the surrounding noise that he was tuning into, right? And distinguish determine what you want to happen, right? Now, in that case, what we wanted to happen was we wanted a user to be added to the HR platform and their onboarding cadence to start. Great, that's 50, honestly, it's 50% of the job done. Now, all we need to do is define when we want that to happen. And we'd say, okay, we want it to happen when somebody gets an email or whatever, right? Like, yeah, when somebody gets an email. So when somebody gets an email given to them in Google Workspace, they get granted an email, we want to, we call that the trigger. And then what we do is we apply that as much as we can, if possible, to the action, right? And we start there. That's when this thing happens, another thing happens, and that's it. And that is the most powerful thing that you can explain to somebody, because from there, you can also say, But when this happens and it has this criteria, we want to do something else. And then you can say, and then when this happens, we want to do this thing. And then we want to refer back to another thing. And the automation can just grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. But ultimately it grows from a very, very simple starting point. When I want this to happen, and I want it to happen when this happens. So I have a trigger and I have an action, and we combine the two. And if you can tease that out of a client, then you are starting, you're starting to get in the mindset of how to build workflows and automate.
Thank you. That's very helpful. That's very useful. And you said you entertain people. Does it mean when people, get on a call with you, they get entertained, or are you speaking about your social media? And if so, also share. Okay, tell me, how do you entertain people, and why is that important for a freelancer? Is it just fun for you, or does it add value to the experience?
So we'll go back to what we talked about before when I was at, sorry. So we'll take us back to Singapore 2016, 2015. And like I said, my life was a bit in turmoil. I was not very happy. I was struggling. So I land in Singapore, like, quite honestly, just like the most depressed I've ever been. And I don't think I've ever been that depressed since. Definitely haven't, actually. But yeah, I was really, really having a tough time. And at the time when you're having a tough time, it feels like the world's ending. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there that have been through tough times, or are even going through tough times. And I struggled with that for a couple of years. And I applied a lot of the approach that I just talked about, like in your first question, to my personal life as well. So not only my professional life, but my personal life. So in my 20s, I was smoking a lot. I was drinking a lot. I was being an idiot, basically. Quite honestly, being reckless with my life, and being reckless with like the gift that I've been given. And I didn't really acknowledge it. But what I did was I came back from Singapore and I was really overweight, huge. It was like double the size I am now. And I was really like depressed. I was drinking a lot. I was smoking. And what I decided was I was going to cut those things out. So around about 30, along with all of the stuff that I said about my career. But what I did was I read a book called The Easy Way to Stop Smoking, which if you smoke, read it. It's amazing. It's the best book. It is the best book I've ever read because it changed my life. And it changed my life because it gave me a technique that is the best technique I've ever learned in my life, which is, and I get this is spoiler alert, so if you want to go read the book, I do want just kind of cover your ears here. But the thing that book taught me was start with a feeling of elation, right? And what that means is, like when you're drinking or smoking or like you've got any addictive behavior, you tend to rely on it as a crutch. And getting out of that habit can feel like a downward spiral that you'll never get out of. And when I was doing that, I read the book and immediately I stopped smoking and I never smoked again. So I haven't smoked since I was 30. So I thought, right, how can, like, this is really interesting. That worked really well. And I don't have any, like, I don't have any craving for a cigarette. No, none at all. And I was like, right, how can I apply this to other parts of my life? And I applied it to alcohol. I wasn't an alcoholic per se, but I did have a problem. I did have a problem where like I couldn't say no to going out. That was my problem, really. I had just major FOMO, and I was like maybe a bit insecure. So I guess everybody's insecure, but maybe a bit insecure. So like feeling like I wouldn't be supported, and quite honestly, I wasn't. Like when you give up drink, you are going to lose friends. It's just a fact. And I lost probably about 70-80% of my friends since I stopped drinking. So I stopped drinking around about the same time, exactly that same way. And stop gambling, was being a bit of an idiot with gambling and stuff like that. I'm just being really honest here, but like I really struggled with all this stuff, and I got rid of all the toxic stuff out of my life, and I was like, wow, I've got energy. What the hell am I going to do with all this energy? I'm waking up at 7 in the morning on a Saturday. This is unreal. Like I'm not waking up feeling like the world is against me. I feel like everything's wonderful. And those, like, that feeling was amazing, and I took that energy and I applied it to other hobbies, right? So I actually Googled, at that point I was like, okay, well, I'm not drinking, so I'm kind of bored, and I'm not smoking, so I've not got anything to do with my hands. So I Googled hobbies for adults, and I like, and obviously you can imagine some weird things came up when I looked at that. But the three hobbies that I stuck at, I did some intro courses into like languages and jiu-jitsu and things like that, but the three things, I took up three hobbies around about the age of 31 30, and those were number one, meditation, one of the best things I ever did. I've lost my practice a little bit, but overall that was amazing choice to do that. So I used to go to courses with people, like actually go to the courses, don't just download an app. I know that we live in a technical world. I know that that's great and everything, but there's only so much you can truly immerse yourself into something if you're not going along and doing it with people. Have a network, build a network if you don't have one. It's super important, regardless, and that means personal life and professional life as well. Build that network, nurture it, because it'll come back and it'll be very beneficial. But the other two hobbies that I took up were board games. And I've got a bit of a problem with board games. I've got like just far too many of them, but that was an amazing hobby because it really works with my mind, right? Like I like to talk to people. I like games and I love automation. I love like workflows. Like board games is basically all of that combined into like this really amazing social thing. I'm a massive, massive board game nerd. And then finally, which is, again, it seems like I can't answer a question without going on a ramble, but the final hobby that I got took up for about 4 or 5 years, and it was one of the best hobbies, maybe one of the best things I've ever done, again, is improv. I decided to do improv, and I met amazing people, truly, truly, truly amazing people doing improv. And I know improv gets a bad rep, and I don't know why. It's quite culty. It's kind of the thing that American sitcoms and things take the mick out of. But whatever. For me, it worked. It was huge. It helped me be present. It helped me find joy. It helped me find joy in other people's joy. And it helped me really understand people. And also the getting laughs from people was secondary in improv, but it did feel good. And particularly the most important thing about improv, it's not about you. It's totally about group mind. So like when somebody else gets a laugh, it's everybody's laugh, right? You can come in and you deliver a line, but you didn't come up with that line. Everything that came before led to you coming up with that line. It was everybody's contribution that got that laugh, or even it was everybody's contribution that made you bomb, but it didn't matter. It was just so joyful. And I always got a lot of satisfaction out of that. And the way that I run my sessions is basically an improvised automation. It is like, hey, what do you need to automate? Great, let's get started. And the way that I make people laugh, or the way that I feel take joy out of that, is we're building something together, right? So I'll be asking questions and things like that. But I'm also very much myself, right? I don't pretend to be this professional fucking douche. I'm very much myself, and people either will relate to it or they won't. But the majority of people, particularly because I try and coach people into knowing what they're going to get when they meet me, like people tend to come with like ready to automate and all of that kind of stuff, and it overall 95% of it works. But when I say make people laugh, I'm like, like when you need to sit and watch somebody build an interface, it can be quite dry, right? When you're waiting around to answer a question, which is, like I said, how I run my sessions, I don't do proposals. It can be quite dry. So the way that I do that, the enjoyment I take out of it is just being quite animated as I'm building it, telling people what I'm doing and being openly frustrated with the software I'm working with, but also with the acknowledgement that I very much revere the software I'm working with, but I knew that was going to happen. Usually these don't have any problems falling out my ears, but I don't usually use them when I'm talking, so it's just pushing them out. But yeah, the idea is just keep them engaged and laughing, and like it can be at you, and I don't mind that, because for me it's an intentional thing. Like it's not like I don't mind if they are laughing at me, because it, to me, I'm making fun of myself. Like I'm in on the joke, and even if they know I am, then that's an absolute added bonus to see them laugh, that they know that I'm self-aware and that that's part of the joke. And if they don't know that, then like, yeah, sure, I've had some people being like, who is in front of me? I have no idea what I'm watching. And that's okay too. Like you can't please everybody. You can't be everybody's cup of tea. And you can do like, yeah, it's just impossible. You can't hold yourself to everybody has standards, and you can be okay with just being yourself, and sometimes it'll land really well and take the moments to relish them. Sometimes people will think you're an absolute nutter, and that's okay too. I am an absolute nutter, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. I'm just being yourself is okay, providing you're not a mass murderer, but like, being yourself is the best thing you can do. And it's the best thing I've... allowing myself to be myself, regardless of whether it gets me in trouble, and it can do and it has done. It doesn't matter. It's like, it's being true to yourself is far more important than other people's opinion. Other people's opinion is their own to have. So, like, yeah, my entire job is just waking up and trying to help people, but then also trying to make them smile at the same time and get a bit of joy while they're watching somebody help them. I hope that answers your question. I'm not sure it did, but it was like such a long way to get there. I'm so sorry, but it was the only way to describe like why I take so much joy in getting people to laugh, right, and to working with somebody, right? Like improv shaped how I built my consultancy. And with improv, you build upon what came before. You can like shut it out, right? Totally. You can ignore it. You can forget about it. You can rip it up. But building upon what works is the most important thing. And that's not just an improv thing, even though it is very specific to improv, right? Like, yes, and like, I mean, it's so much, the concept of improv is so much fun, right? Like the thing that they'll teach you when you go to improv, and I'm not an improv teacher, but I do love it, right? The thing that they'll teach you, I had a really good improv teacher called Chris Mead. He was so, so good. In fact, the whole of Hoopla in London, if you're in London watching this, go to Hoopla, hoopla.co.uk, I think it is. But they're just amazing bunch of people. Steve Rowe, Chris Mead, Katie Shute, like all of these people who taught me, really taught me the power of what it means to build upon what works and be okay with things not working, being okay with failure. It's liberating. And the whole way I work is, and the whole of automation is yes and. Yes, this like this has been set up and then we want to do this, or we want to do this. But yeah, the first thing they'll teach you in improv is like when you're trying to have a conversation with somebody. Okay, let's have a conversation, right? And we're gonna do this. Me and you, what we're gonna do, Aziz, together, is we're gonna do three scenarios, right? And we're gonna decide which one's more fun, okay? If you're okay with this, we don't need to. I can answer questions, but I would rather talk to you more than just rant. So great. Great, so we'll do the first scenario. So the first scenario is we're going to have a conversation, right? And we're just going to be two people. We're not ourselves. We're anybody we want to be. We're going to have a conversation. And what I'm going to ask you to do is be stubborn, right? You want to do something, right? Like, you've got something in your mind that you want to do. And you're going to try and get there, right? You're going to try and get to where you want to go. Where you want to go. But I am me, and I'm going to try to get to where I want to go, right? So we're going to have this conversation, right? I'll start, and I'd like you to just keep an open dialogue, and it maybe go on for 30 seconds a minute. Doesn't need to go on for long, but the idea is that you're going to keep your agenda front of mind, right? Whatever that might be, and ignoring my agenda. And we'll see how fun it is. I don't know if it'll be fun. Sometimes it can be fun. Ruining my whole entire teaching lesson. Hey, Stephen. I had this really good idea last night. I was so excited to come around to your house and tell you. I really want to go to this forest. I've heard that there's pixies in it. It sounds amazing. Do you want to go?
No, but this earth is much more secure, so let's stay around here.
Yeah, no, but space is infinite. There's stars, and there's wonder, and there's joy to be had. Who knows what's going to happen on the planet? We could discover a planet.
No, but I love my routines. My grandparents and their grandparents are buried here. I like to be near them because I'm so loyal.
No, but your grandparents are dead. We're alive. Surely you want to go and explore?
No, but exploration is overrated. I believe that if we forget where we're coming from, then we're not worth being alive.
So you see, we got nowhere, right? We got nowhere fast, right? And we weren't in agreement. It wasn't really much fun. And all of my joy was diminished with your response, and your joy was diminished with my response. And overall, we got nowhere, right? And this can be quite a lot of corporate life, right? People cutting you down, having to justify things, having to make business cases for every single thing. It's arduous, right? So let's move on to the next bit, right? Which is, so again, this is the second exercise, but instead of no but, I'd like you to say yes but, right? So you're kind of committed, you're okay with it, you're ready to come along, but you've got some reservations, and we'll see how fun that'll be. You can start this time if you want.
Jack, this is so exciting. I saw people down the range shooting at bullets from this new machine gun. Let's go train. Let's go make some things explode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. Can we do it tomorrow? Because today I've just got too much work to do. I'm totally down for it. But can you help me do a bit of work before we go?
Yes, but people are there right now. We're going to feel the vibe, the excitement. They might not be there tomorrow. This is an opportunity, you know, how things are quiet around here usually. So let's go now.
Yeah, but what if we get shot? You're talking about machine guns. Who knows what will happen? It can be dangerous. It sounds really scary, and I don't know. I've got work to do, and... I'm totally down for it, but maybe later on or something like that. There's always crowds everywhere. It's okay. So you see, you can go on, sorry.
Yes, go to the yes and.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. So what we can see here is we raised the level a bit, right? We were on the same page. We didn't necessarily, we agreed that in principle that we were going to go do something, but did anything really get done? And that's again a lot of if you think about business environments, a lot of that happens at companies, right? People get buy-in for a project and half-ass it because but I've got my priorities, and nothing ever gets done, right? And that's, again, detrimental to most companies. Which is why I think like there's so much business for improv stuff, right? Because improv is so important. Anyway, we'll come back to this in a second. Have we still got time to run over? I can run. I know it's like 5 o'clock. We're on the hour. We good? Okay, so yes and. So let's do the third scenario. I don't mind starting. And the way we will build upon, or the way we will respond to each other in this case will be yes and, right? So, Bobby, I am going to become a local consultant and you are going to join me on my journey. What do you say?
Yes, and let's master all of the tools, even in new ones. Let's become the expert of experts because we are like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can handle all the back-end stuff and I will handle all the front-end stuff and the customer stuff because I love working with customers and you're amazing at these logic puzzles. And I think we could really create something. What do you think we should be called? Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say that. I think we should really create something.
Yes, and let's call it the Board Gamers of Automation and No-Code Consulting, because we are thinking like that. That's what we do.
Yeah, and we can have a logo where we have like dice and cogs and they're all like combined together and we could create a website called boardgameautomators.com. Let's check it out on Google Domains.
Yes, and let's buy the .io, the .com, the .co, the .net, all of them so that we dominate this market. And I'm already tweeting about it right now. I'm so excited.
Me too. We just created a company, Aziz, in about a minute, right? In 30 seconds, we created a company. So you compare the difference between those three scenarios, right? Like where you get to and how and what the energy's like and what feels good. And it feels good to help other people achieve their vision, right? Like and to help, it helps you, right? Like it brings people closer together when there's openness to do something with that mindset of I am going to make you look good and forget your own ego. Just get rid of it and like make other people look good. And or even if you're like a solo improviser like I am, I guess, in my consultancy, like apply those principles and double down on what works and cut out the stuff that doesn't work. It's exactly like that. So yeah, that's what I mean about joy and making people laugh and apply a lot of those improv principles that I learned to everything that I do and to my entire company and to my personal life as well. So for me, improv is had a massive, massive impact on my life. And I think it is something that everybody should try, like doing a course, if they can. And yeah, shout out to like Hoopla, but like, I bet you, if you work in a city, any city, there'll be improv around you and it's life changing and you get to meet amazing people, and we've not got COVID anymore, or most of us aren't living with that anymore. So now's the time to get out and start yes anding.
Yes, and as you mentioned, improv is something you recommend to everybody because it will change their lives. So for me, before ending, I of course recommend to all the listeners to check out Processio, which is competing with the market. I mean, you should check it out with Zapier, with Make, with all the other people. Processio is the modern low-code, no-code platform for advanced automation and creating an enterprise-grade backend for your software. You can request access to a totally free account at processio.app that will be very useful to you. And for those with higher needs, there is a very generous 50% discount code, which is better 50 off, one word in capital letters. More information in the description. Thank you, Andy. This was my privilege, my honor, such a wonderful time, the longest episode of the whole podcast. And I wish you a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you.